Bhagavad Gita, the three destinations are described as the destinations of persons in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. It is stated in the Gita that those who are in the mode of goodness are promoted to better living conditions in higher planets, and those who are in the mode of passion remain within this material world on the earth or on heavenly planets, but those who are in the mode of ignorance are degraded to an animal life on planets where life is lower than human. But one who is Krishna conscious is above these three material modes of nature. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that anyone who engages in devotional service to the Lord automatically becomes transcendental to the three destinations of material nature and is situated in the Brahma Bhuta, or self-realized stage. Although Swayambhuva Manu, the ruler of the material world, appeared to be absorbed in material happiness, he was neither in the mode of goodness, nor in the mode of passion or ignorance, but in the transcendental stage. Therefore, one who fully engages in devotional service is always liberated. Bhuva Mangala Thakur, a great devotee of the Lord, stated, "If I have unflinching devotion to the lotus feet of Krishna, then mother liberation is always engaged in my service. The complete perfection of material enjoyment, religion, and economic development is at my command. People are after dharma, arta, karma, and moksha. Generally, they perform religious activities to achieve some material gain, and they engage in material activity for sense gratification. After being frustrated in material sense gratification, one wants to be liberated and becomes one with the absolute truth. These four principles form the transcendental path for the less intelligent. Those who are actually intelligent engage in Krishna consciousness, not caring for these four principles of the transcendental method. They are at once elevated themselves to the transcendental platform, which is above liberation. Liberation is not a very great achievement for a devotee, to say nothing of the results of ritualistic performances in religion, economic development, or the materialistic life of sense gratification. Devotees do not care for these. They are situated always on the transcendental platform, or the Brahma Bhuta stage of self-realization." Amagyan timanandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurin alitam yena tasmai Sri Gurave namaha Sri Chaitanya manobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swapadanti Vancha kalpatu rubyascha kripa sindhu vievacha patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare interesting part of the Bhagavatam. This part of the Bhagavatam gives many instructions to those who are particularly Grihastha. So it's famous in terms of its... Can you guys work out what you're doing? So you just, it works out how we should live in the material world but still become liberated from the material world. So the Varnashram system is for that. It's to fulfill your material desires in a regulated way. But the goal is not to stay in the material world. The goal is to liberate yourself from the material world. So this section of the Bhagavatam is very instructive. It's very famous also. The relationship between Kardama Muni and Devahuti. So that is famous. It's probably the principal part of the Bhagavatam in regards to Grihastha instructions. So how to live in the material world. So before Devahuti and Kardama Muni are together, then we hear about the father of Devahuti, whose name is Swayambhuva Manu. So it is saying here that he had everything material. Everything was in his. Everything he desired was present. He was the king of the earth, so extremely powerful, and much more opulent than these days. These days, the opulence is not as great as it was previously. It describes when Yudhishthira, and that's not that long ago, that's only 5,000 years ago. Swayamvara was going back much further. But when Yudhishthira was there, they would eat off plates made of gold. Even I saw a little bit of a documentary a few years ago on Windsor Castle. So Windsor Castle is the residence of the Queen of England. And when I saw that, then I got an idea of what opulence means. Because, I mean, there's some opulence in that castle, which is, it begins to show you, heads back towards the Vedic age, what it was like. So some of the plate, they show you the plates that the queen eats off sometimes. So they're gold plated. So solid silver with gold plated. So, I mean, it goes towards what Yudhishthira was. I mean, Yudhishthira was solid gold, you know, which we can't even calculate how much that, in you know, modern value. You have one of those plates, yeah, you pay for the kitchen. Just get one of Yudhishthira's plates, and fundraising's done. And just go down the secular town hall, show them, hey, here's the plate, that's it. Okay, thank you for coming. Yeah. Back then, that was opulence. And they had so much opulence that it was... And it says, Yudhishthira, sometimes they perform sacrifices with the gold plates and the gold utensils and all these things. And at the end, they would discard them all and say, okay, we're not using that again. That's how opulent the kingdom was. And then that's how the Varnashram system worked. These days, Kalo, Sudra, Sambhav. Most people in Kali Yuga are Sudra. They're just workers. Sudra means someone who works. He serves the other three Varnas. The Vaishyas organize everything. You know, Prabhupada said today it's basically Vaishyas and Shudras. Like Donald Trump's trying to become the president of America. He's a Vaishya. You know, just money man. That's all he thinks of. And all he talks about, I'm going to run this country, we're going to make money. It's Vaishya. He's not qualified to be the leader. You never read the Bhagavatam when the Vaishya was the king. You know, like Nanda Maharaj was the king of the community, but not of the whole country. The Kshatriyas have higher priority because the Vaishya's thinking money, money, money. Which is good because you need money to run society. Prabhupada said money is the blood of ISKCON. You know, you can have ISKCON here, but there's no money, there's no blood. We can't do anything, so you need the money. So you need Vaishya, you need devotees who are Vaishya. Some devotees are Vaishya. They're just good at making money. Whatever they do, money just comes. And so we need those devotees because they run the whole ship. They keep the whole thing running. But they shouldn't run the whole country. Like Donald Trump, he can't run the country. He's only thinking economics. You know, if he's a real Kshatriya, if he's a real leader, you know, leader means Kshatriya. So the Kshatriya, he gives respect to the Brahmana. So you don't hear Donald Trump in these speeches, oh, you know, we're going to get all the Hare Krishna devotees to give me advice so that we can run America properly. You know, you don't hear him saying this. There's no connection to the Brahmanas. So it's just a Vaishya mentality. So Prabhupada says that these days, basically, everyone is Sudra and there's a few Vaishyas around, they're organizing everyone else. Right? Everyone gets up early in the morning and goes to work, and the guys who are running the companies, they're the Vaishyas. That's basically how it operates, the whole place. So in the Vedic times, the Sudras, they were given the leftovers from these Jagyas. So Yudhishthira performed the Jagya. They'd have all the gold and utensils and all these things. And then they would distribute it to all the Shudras. Now, here, take that. We're not going to use it again, so you have it. So they lived on charity from the king. The king would provide for everyone. You see even in some countries like Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. You see some of these Middle Eastern countries. In some of those countries, people still don't own their house. Right? The king of Saudi Arabia or whichever country, I can't remember. Which they might be correct on. What is it?
Bahrain.
Bahrain? Yeah, Bahrain. Several of the countries there, I think, they have this system. So basically, if you need a house, the government, the king, just builds it for you. There's the house there, you live in it. You don't own it, right? But you have everything you want. You need a house. No one doesn't have a house. No, like, poverty or... No, that's actually a proper government. It's more like the Vedic system. You need something here, take it. So he would, Yudhishthira would do the jagya, and then he would give it, here, take it. So then the sutra goes home, he's eating off a gold plate as well. And sutra's at home, you know, he's having his khichdi off a gold plate. That's their life, you know, because they live on the remnants. The royal family, Yudhishthira, you know, they sometimes only wear the clothes once. They're beautiful clothes, they only wear them once. Gold embroidered and very opulent. So they just, at the end of their jagya or ceremony, you know, ceremonies going on all the time, because the king, they just say, okay, give it all to the sutras. So sutras are walking down the street with the king's clothes on. Because yeah, the king makes sure, hey, just take it, whatever you need, have it. We're not going to use it again, so you take it. So that is the system. But one thing, it's interesting, in Vedic culture, the sutra never has a vehicle. Right? That is forbidden in the Manusmriti, in the Shastra. You never give them a chariot, a sutra. As soon as they get on it, they use it for the wrong thing. Now, you look at Kali Yuga right now, everyone has a chariot. Right? You go to every house, they have their chariot parked out the front. Right? And they all use it for the wrong thing. Meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling. Right? That's what you do with your chariot. You get in your chariot, your car, you drive off when you've got free time, when you're not working. Most of the time you're working, but when you're not, get in and you just go off and enjoy your senses. Break the regular principle. So you don't give them to the... That was the system. So when the Hare Krishna movement gets into government, we say, okay, no one has a car anymore. And actually it would work like that. That would be the better system. Because then you're forced to walk. And if you only walk, you'll only go... You know, you don't walk very far every day. You know, because you have to come back home again. So it means that... You know, go back, live out in the country, decentralize the whole city, right? Go back out into the country, and then you just, that's how it used to work. People didn't have vehicles. So you're forced to live within a 10-kilometer radius. You know, people didn't leave their village. You know, once in a while you go on a pilgrimage somewhere, but most of the time you just stay in your village your whole life. Right? And everything you need, you have to get from that area of the village. That's how it worked. That was the system. And then you can't do nonsense. You can't go off. And there's older people in the village who stop you from doing nonsense. That was the Vedic system, and everything was working fine. And then we wrecked it all in 200 years. Right? We invented cars, we gave everyone cars, now everyone just does nonsense, and society's chaos. You had sutras just running around all day, right? Just going off, breaking the regular principles, and society's just chaotic. Right? You can do whatever you want, whenever you want, and it's all at your facility. You want to eat flesh? You can just walk down to 7-Eleven and get a pie. You want intoxication, you just walk up Victoria Avenue, there's a bottle shop. Right? You want illicit sex, you just go down to St Kilda, there's a prostitute. You want gambling, you just go to Crown Casino, it's all there. In 5 minutes of this temple, you can break all the regular principles, as much as you want. Right? Do it. Right? So that's the system. Right? So it's now society's chaos. It can never be peaceful when people are not following the four regular principles. So therefore, we are... When we join ISKCON, we take that vow. Right? Viti Nisheda. Viti means one thing I will do, I'll chant every day to purify my consciousness, Cheto, Dapa, Namajana. And I will not do these things, because these things will throw my life into chaos. So therefore, those things are forbidden. Do not do. Do nots and do's. The do's take you to Krishna, because Rupa Goswami says everything is based on two instructions. What are the two instructions? We always remember Krishna, and we never forget Krishna, right? So all of those positive things, chanting Hare Krishna, chanting your 16 rounds, hearing the Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deity, associating with devotees, going to the holy places, all those positive things lead you to remembering Krishna. And all the negative things stop you from forgetting Krishna. Therefore, in the Bhakti Rasa Mrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, in chapter 8, it says offenses to be avoided. Right, 64 offenses. 64 things, do not do this, do not do that, do not do that. Because if you do those things, you will forget Krishna. And if you do all the other 64 things, the other positive things, then you will remember Krishna. That's the system. So, Swayambhuva Manu, he had everything material that he needed. He wasn't attached to it. That's what this part of the Bhagavatam, That's why this part of the Bhagavatam is specifically for Grihasthas. But it's for everyone. But specifically for everyone. It's Grihastha Dharma. You can have everything you want, but don't be attached to it. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching. Swayambhuva Manu had everything you could desire, but he was not attached to it. And that's how we should live in this material world. Actually, it doesn't matter what ashram we're in, whether you're a brahmachari or grihastha or vanaprastha or sannyas. You can have whatever you want in this world, but do not be attached. That is the system. So Swayambhuva Manu, he had said, he performed his duty perfectly. He got his daughter married, which was his responsibility. So he found the appropriate man. That's the Vedic system. As Prabhupada explains, the woman will always be protected. Then society is peaceful. Right? She needs the father to protect. That's what Swayambhuva Manu is doing. Right? He's protecting his daughter. And then he says, okay, there's a proper man now. Now you take. You will protect. And then later on, when Kardama is finished, right, then he gives to Kapila, the son. He said, now you protect. So in all stages, she is looked after nicely. So that is the Vedic system. So he fulfills his desires materially. Everything he wants, everything he needs, he has that. But then at the end, he says, okay, that's enough. And now I'll go off and renounce it all. Because I'm not attached to it. And we have to see that in our Krishna consciousness. That we may be Grihastha, as I am, as many devotees are. We may be Grihastha. So it means you have facility. You have your material. Brahmacharya is much less. It's much more simplified. It's not, Brahmacharya ashram is not about material sense gratification. The other three ashrams are not about material facility. There really isn't a lot of facility in those because you don't want that facility. If you want facility, you go to the other ashram. So if you need that facility materially, you have that, but the point is you must be becoming detached from it. Right? You have to become detached from wife, from children, from husband, from your Crocs, from your Birkenstocks, from your Samsung, iPhone, Galaxy Plus. You have to become detached. Right? Because everyone's attached in this material world. But you have to become detached from it all. Although you may have all those things, right, but you're not attached to it. And you see many examples within the Shastra. Back in these days, you see Swayambhuva Manu. That scope millions of years ago. If you come much closer to the age, the age we're in now, you see Pundarik Vijayaniti in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, in the pastimes of Mahaprabhu, also extremely rich and opulent, but no attachment to it. And then you see if you come down, you see Prabhupada, extremely opulent. Prabhupada owned, Prabhupada just to say, I have 108 temples, in each temple I have 10 vehicles, I have 100 servants, and I'm attached to none of it. He used to have, Prabhupada had so much opulence, but detached from it. So that is our life. And if we're Grihastha, you may have these things, but you have to develop detachment as time goes by. So Swayambhuva Manu is showing us perfect Grihastha existence. Right? You live in this world, but you're not attached to all of these things. And of course we're attached, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. Otherwise we would be in the other ashrams. But the attachment must become less and less and less over time. If you look in the Krishna book, around about chapter 30, Prabhupada says, how do you test how advanced you're becoming in Krishna consciousness? Do you ever sometimes wonder, am I advancing? No one thinks about it? Okay. Any questions or comments? No, we have to think. Are we becoming advanced? We have to think. What's the point of being a devotee if you're not advancing? What's the point of being a devotee if you don't become a pure devotee? We are pure devotees. Originally we were pure devotees with Krishna. Now we've become contaminated. Now we have to become a pure devotee again. What's the point of being a devotee if you're not advancing? What's the point? Right? Look at your life. If you're not making advancement, rapid advancement, because this process is rapid, then why do it? So Prabhupada says, how do you measure? How do you know if you're becoming advanced or not? Right? Prabhupada says, if your material desire is becoming less and your attachment to Krishna is becoming more, right? Sometimes it goes the other way. Sometimes like our material desires are swallowing us and our attachment to Krishna. So it goes like that. That is called anishtita bhakti. Anishtita means unsteady. Because we're going through a nata nivriti, so we're doing bhajana kriya. And then sometimes, you know, it goes up and down. But gradually, as you become nishta, nishta means fixed in devotional service, it means your natas, they dissipate. And they go down, you know, around about 70% gone. And then you become steady in bhakti. Right? And then gradually you just advance and advance and advance and advance and advance. Right? And how do you know you're advancing? Prabhupada said, are you becoming more attached to Krishna? Hands up if you are attached to Krishna. Okay, funny, because all the manajis went, you know, like this, and all the prabhus are like, oh. Yeah, that's the problem with men. They overanalyze everything. That's why women, Prabhupada actually says in Krishna book, he says women are just naturally attracted to Krishna. So the female form is actually an advantage in Kali Yuga in many respects. You'll see if you go to the temples, like the most famous, one of the most famous temples in India is the Radha Govinda Mandir, right, in Jayapur, right, Rupa Goswami's own deities, the Radha Govinda. If you go there, right, all the men can't even get to the altar. Hundreds of Madhijis just there in front of the deity waiting, because there's bhakti. The men are at the back saying, oh, you know, is Krishna really God? Is the deity real? Yeah. Shall I shave my face today? Or is it time for breakfast? You know, men are overanalyzed sometimes. You know, I just said then, how do you know? You know, are you attracted to Krishna? All the men just okay, I'm attracted to Krishna. All the men are, yeah, I think I'm attracted to Krishna. I should be attracted to Krishna. I used to be attracted to Krishna. Yeah, men are too analytical sometimes. Prabhupada actually says, he writes in the Bhagavatam, he says that the male form is meant for self-realization. Now, there are advantages to being in a male body. But he said the female form is advantageous for bhakti. And bhakti is what we're about ultimately. Bhakti means sentiment, emotion, bhav. Right? So women does more naturally have that. They just look at Krishna and think Krishna is beautiful. Right? The men look and they think, oh, you know, I would have put the crown differently. I would have dressed like this, like that. And the women just think, Krishna is beautiful. So that is, Prabhupada says, are we becoming attached to Krishna? Then you know, are you advancing? You should be attached to him. Asakti. First verse. At 700 verses in the Bhagavad Gita, which verse did Prabhupada lecture on more than any other verse? Yeah. Which is, which
seven.
Chapter?
Seven.
Chapter 7? Verse?
One.
Prabhupada lectured on that verse more than any other verse in the Bhagavad Gita. And what was the second verse he lectured on the most? Chapter 9, verse 1. The most was chapter 7. Where Prabhupada would sit down often in your Bhagavad Gita traveling around the world. Sit down, just open up. Chapter 7, verse 1. That was the most. Because Prabhupada usually chose what he would speak on. And then, chapter 9, verse 1. That was the second. So what does the seventh chapter, the first verse, say? The word is asakti. Asakti means attached to Krishna. If you're not attached to Krishna, then what's your point? Why are you here? Why do you come here every day? Because the breakfast is good. Why do you come here? You're only coming because you're becoming attached to Krishna. And it's interesting, if you analyze, I remember Tamal Krishnamurti, as you said one time, he said that there's many reasons why devotees leave. But he said one of the main reasons why devotees leave the society, Krishna consciousness movement, is we're not attached to Krishna. If you're attached to Krishna, you'll never leave. You can't leave. Like one time one devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I resign. The devotee came to Prabhupada, so I resign. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, how do you resign from being Krishna's servant? That's what you are. How do you resign? Okay, you can resign from being temple president, or you can resign from being the pot washer, or you can resign from being whatever you want. But you can't resign from being Krishna's servant. Because you are Krishna's servant. That's all you are. So, the whole point of this movement is to become attached to Krishna. Prabhupada said the perfection of your Krishna consciousness is when you can take Krishna by the hand and lead him, just like Mother Yashoda leads him. Prabhupada said the whole goal of this movement is to see Krishna face to face. And that desire should be driving your Krishna consciousness. Maybe not in the beginning. What drives you in the beginning? Breakfast. Yeah, in the beginning, it's just driven by prasad. Am I going to get enough rasgullas for breakfast? In the beginning, we're driven by other things. And then in the beginning, we're driven by, I want to be the biggest book distributor. When they read the score out in the morning, I want to be number one. That drove me for many years. You want to be like the most. Or, you got a reputation. Your reputation drives you. Or you wear saffron, that drives you. And so many other ulterior motives, anattas, they drive us in the beginning. But you won't stay a devotee forever based on that. And you'll miss it. If you get old and you're still driven by all these things, then you're missing the whole point. Just like last night, we were studying the Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, in our Bhaktivedanta class. And Sharada Radha Mataji, she's 70 years old, over 70 now. So she's old. She's the oldest person in the course, in the class. So she was telling us, because she's old now, she's done everything, had family, had kids, made lots of money, she's a doctor, done the whole thing. And then she was telling everyone in the class, she said, it's all useless. It's all a waste of time. She's got a realization. She says, family's useless. They all argue with each other. They just want the money. They're waiting for you to die. This is life. Not every family, not every person, but it's there. It's not uncommon these days. Even just here in Albert Park, 10 years ago, one guy murdered his parents, invited them around for dinner, and then suffocated, put pillows on their face and murdered them at 80 years old, so he could get their money, because they were millionaires. It happens. Okay. Not that, it's not common, but these things happen. So she was telling us, when you get old, you should have that realization, it was all useless. And then I was telling them, I was upstairs with Tamal Krishna Maharaj in the double room up there. I was with him. I was a brahmachari. It was just the two of us. And then there was some grihasthas outside, like on the top part, the landing upstairs. And he was listening to their conversation. I didn't speak of grihastha business. And he looked at me and he said, it's a waste of energy. He said, it's a waste of energy. He said, there's no pleasure in it. He was encouraging me to stay brahmachari. Been a devotee for 3 years or 4 years or something. So he was encouraging me to stay brahmachari. That's why he was saying. But he was making that point. And then Sharada Radha, she's at plus 70 now, a nice devotee, plus 70, Tulsi Nandi. She goes, have you ever been to her house? And you should go to her house one time. She has an apartment in St. Kilda Road. It's on the 13th floor of one of those towers in St. Kilda Road. You walk in there, and about 50% of the house is Tulsi plants. It's like a forest. They're just everywhere. And she keeps it hot all the time, so it's like walking to Mayapur. It's all hot and humid, and just Tulsi plants everywhere. And she just looks after Tulsi. And she picks Tulsi, and she gives it to all the devotees for their puja, their worship. So she's saying, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is saying, as a sannyasi, one who's already realized, he said, it's all just a waste of energy. He said, there's no pleasure in it. Right? And now she's lived her whole life as a grihastha. And at the end, she's saying, it's a waste of energy. There's no pleasure in it. It's the same. And then Swayambhu Manu, he's doing the whole thing. Got his daughter married, ran the earth, right? Ran the government, perfect king, perfect grihastha, all these things. And at the end, it's a waste of energy. There's no pleasure in it. Now I'm just going to focus on Krishna and go back to the spiritual. So that's how a grihastha should be. We should live in this world very responsibly, because Raghunath Das Goswami, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he writes to Lord Chaitanya. So he writes a letter to Lord Chaitanya. He says, I want to come with you now. Right? And he was a millionaire. Raghunath Das Goswami, rich family, right? Servants, didn't have to do anything, right? Beautiful wife, everything you could want, he had it. And then he wrote to Lord Chaitanya and he said, I don't want it. I just want to come and live with you. And Lord Chaitanya wrote back to him and said, don't speak foolishly. Actually, he met him. They met in Shantipur at one time. Lord Chaitanya took sannyas and he was going back. They tricked him, and then Raghunath came at that time. So, and Lord Chaitanya said, you're speaking foolishly. He said, do your activities perfectly. Right? And internally, always think of Krishna. Materially, be very responsible. Do everything nicely, but internally, just think of Krishna. And Krishna will deliver you. That's what Lord Chaitanya says to me. And he said the same thing to Rupa and Sanatana. Rupa and Sanatana wrote a letter to Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya said the same thing. He said, be a paramour. Paramour means someone who is, you're married, but you're having an affair. So devotees, we should all be like that. We should all be having an affair. Right? You know, we're grihasthas, we have a wife, we have kids, all that thing. But even though we're doing all that perfectly, right? But always you're thinking of the other person, Krishna. So as devotees, we should all be thinking like that. You do everything in this world nicely, like Swaguruman, runs the kingdom, so the whole thing stays on track. Make sure everyone following Dharma. Look after your kids nicely. Look after your wife nicely. Look after your husband nicely. Do everything nicely. But internally, you just think, I just want to be with Krishna. You know, I don't want to be spending my energy on this. I just want to be with Krishna. So that's how you should be feeling. And the end of your life, that should be your realization. Now I just want to be with Krishna. So, in the purport, Prabhupada says, the three destinations are meant for persons who are under the control of the three modes of material nature. So he transcended the three destinations. So Prabhupada says the three destinations are goodness, passion, and ignorance. So when you're in the material world is dominated by these three gunas, the three modes of material nature. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, which chapter is called the three modes of material nature? Chapter 14, right? It's called the three modes of material nature. Now it's interesting because the Gita is divided into three sections. So what are the first six chapters? Generically, what do we call them? Karma Yoga, right? And then the middle six chapters? Bhakti Yoga, right? And then the last six chapters? Jnana Yoga. So generally we say that section. So chapters 7 to 12, they are Bhakti Yoga. Now, out of the whole Gita, if you take the Gita as a whole, right, which chapter is said to be the most important? Nine is said to be the most important. Nine is like the Rihasya, that's the center, that's where Mammana Bhavamabha, that's where the essential verses are. And then chapter 10, the beginning, because chapter 10 is the chapter of Shloki, okay, verses 8 to 11. So if you take those four verses in chapter 9, that's the essence, that's the essential part. So then, if you look at the first six chapters, it's called Karma Yoga. So chapter 3 is called Karma Yoga, chapter 4 is called Jnana Yoga, chapter 5 is the mixture of the two. Prabhupada says action in Krishna consciousness. So it's like amalgamating karma and jnana. Karma means your activity. Jnana means using your brain. Right? So it means doing things with intellect. So that's what we're aiming at. That's what the Gita. So the first six chapters are teaching you about that. How to act karma, but with intellect, jnana. So you make the right decisions. Right? And then what are the last chapters called? So if you go from chapter 13 to 17, those five chapters, because 18 is a summary. There's nothing new in the 18th chapter, it's just a summary of everything previously. So if you go from verses 13 to 17, that's called Jnana Yoga. Now, if you analyze it, if you've ever studied it carefully, what's the main theme of those five chapters, of the Jnana Yoga section of the Gita? Because it's interesting, because you have God himself, right? Krishna is the original supreme intellect. He is the Adi Kavi Raj, and he's the most brilliant speaker and intellect and teacher. Right? He's the Adi Guru himself. So he can speak on anything. It's his book, it's his Gita, it's his conversation. So what does he choose to analyze in his Jnana section? What's the main theme or the main subject matter? Prakriti, yeah. essentially it's the gunas. Now, if you ever actually look at those final chapters, he's really analysing the three modes of material nature. Because the 14th chapter is the three modes of material nature. The 16th chapter is the divine and demoniac natures, which is really dividing qualities in goodness and qualities in passion and ignorance. Chapter 17 is divisions of faith, where he goes through, he says goodness, passion, ignorance, goodness, passion, ignorance. He goes through the foods, your faith, he goes through all the different activities. So really it's the three modes, that's the main thing that he's analysing. Now, the material world is dominated by the three modes of material nature. And Krishna says within the Bhagavad Gita, they are always fighting for supremacy. So every day, you know, one part of the day you're in goodness, a few minutes later you're in passion, and a few minutes later you're in ignorance. Right? So they're always fighting for supremacy. So which of the modes does Krishna favour? Sattva guna. It's favourable. Why? Because it's favourable for the execution of bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam is an expansion or an elaboration of the Bhagavad Gita. And so Krishna speaks very concisely about the three modes in the Gita, but then it's elaborated by Kapiladeva a little bit later in this chapter, in this canto. He analyzes the three modes of material nature even more carefully, and he analyzes bhakti or devotional service according to the three modes of nature. So you can do devotional service. Hands up if you're doing devotional service. Okay, most of you are doing devotional service. So if you're doing devotional service, Kapila says you can do it in ignorance, in passion, and in goodness. It's not that everything you do is automatically transcendental. And he said there are symptoms of one who is in the doing devotional service, but he does it in the mode of ignorance. What are the symptoms? He can't get along with anyone else. Now, some devotees are like that. They're doing devotional service, but they're really hard to cooperate with. Very hard to work with. Right? And he says one of the symptoms is the person is angry a lot. Right? Always getting angry and yelling at this one and that one. Right? That's not very good. Right? You're doing devotional service, but you're frying out everyone else while you're doing it. Right? And then it says that the person is a separatist. He'll worship Krishna and he'll worship the Guru, but everyone else is like, Krishna is obviously advanced because he's Krishna, and the Guru is obviously advanced because he's my Guru, and everyone else is like, they're getting there, they're trying their best. That's his mentality, right? And those are the mode of passion. You're doing devotional service in the mode of passion. It's interesting because it says there you're also a separatist. It's all about me. My accomplishments, my achievements. I did so much. Every time you meet the devotees, I did this, I did that. I met so many devotees. I opened so many temples, always telling everyone what he did. That's the mode of passion. And then, devotional service and the mode of goodness. What are the qualities of that? Well, if we go back to ignorance for a second, that means you're sleepy. That is devotional service and the mode of tamamo. But, in the mode of goodness, what are the qualities? It's all conducive for bhakti. And one of the acharyas, there are many acharyas who commented on the Bhagavatam, but one of the acharyas is one of the more less known acharyas. He says, when you analyze the two modes, goodness and shuddha-sattva, sattva-guna and shuddha-sattva, he said they're very similar. And one time a devotee, one time a person said to Prabhupada, how will I know one of your followers or one of your disciples? And Prabhupada said, because they are perfect ladies and gentlemen. So you see, even someone who's not a devotee in this world, who's a lady, or sometimes you meet people who are so well-mannered, not devotees, but they're so polite and courteous, have such good qualities. That's very similar to bhakti. Because you see, Prabhupada was like that. Prabhupada was in Shuddha-sattva, and he was a perfect gentleman. And you see, sometimes you meet people, they're just such nice people. They're like devotees, they have the same quality. So we should practice devotional service in the mode of goodness. That is the analysis given in Bhagavatam. Now, What are the qualities? Because it says there are three modes of nature there, and they're always fighting each other for supremacy. If you analyze the mode of ignorance, right? Because in the material world, there are the three gunas that control everything. Just like who controls this material world? What is the person who's in control of this material energy? Durga. Okay. And what does she hold in her hand? Trident. The trident means a spear with three prongs. So why does she hold that? Because she controls everyone in the material world with those three. All of us right now. She's above us and she's just controlling us. So those three prongs, they represent the three gunas, goodness, passion, ignorance. They also represent past, present, and future, because everyone in this world is controlled by time. They also represent Adi Bhautika, Adi Devika, Adi Atmika Klesh. So that's how she controls everyone in this material world. So we're all controlled by past, present, and future. So if you're, how do you know if you're in Tamagun too much? You're always in the past. Yeah, lamenting in the past. Right? That's someone who's too much in Tamagun. Oh, this happened to me. Oh, and that happened to me. Oh, and I had that perfect girlfriend and she left me. Right? And then all the Bollywood songs are about that. I lost my... And all the Hollywood songs are about that. Oh, I lost my... You know, all the songs, they're about that. It's a lamenting. There's even one strand of music in the West. It's called the blues. And that's all it's about. Oh, I lost her, and I lost this, and it's a mode of ignorance. So you can spend your life like that, it's okay. And even when you're chanting a japa, half the time you're like that. Are you chanting japa, you're just thinking, oh, you know, that happened yesterday, and this devotee said that to me the other day, and then this happened, and then that. So that's mode of ignorance. What is mode of passion? You're always thinking of the future. Right? Mode of passion is, you can't just be here now today. You're thinking, how much money am I going to make tomorrow? Right? What am I going to do in my retirement? Right? What will happen? So it's always, mode of passion just means always the future. Not settled. Always thinking, I need more, I need more, I need this, I need that. And you spend your whole japa time thinking like that. Oh, I need to do this, I need to organize that. Even when you're chanting your japa sometimes as a devotee. Right? But you're thinking, oh, I have to do this tomorrow, I have to do this the next day. Too passionate. Okay. And what is the mode of goodness? Yeah, right here, right now. And you only make advancement when you're in the mode of goodness, when you're in the present. Or you could say you only make significant advancement. In other words, your consciousness is right here, right now. It's like you're listening to the Bhagavatam class. We come to Bhagavatam class every day or many days, right? But sometimes you're in the class, you're listening, you're right here, right now, you're listening, you're making advancement. Sometimes you're in the class, you know, you look at the devotees, you give a class, and they just come looking at you, and they're gone. Like that, their minds are not there. And they're thinking of something in the future or something in the past. Right? So then, at that point in time, you're not making significant advancement. You only make significant advancement if you're in the mode of goodness, which means in the present. So that is in devotional service, that is the most significant mode of nature. And Prabhupada says that is a springboard to pure goodness. Because the goal is not the mode, the goal is Shuddhasattva. But if you practice in the mode of goodness, you get to Shuddhasattva. Right? And in this kind, you can't always practice in the mode of goodness. It's just unfortunate you can't do that, or fortunate you can't do that. Because there's so much to do sometimes. Even though you just want to settle down and just be in the mode of goodness, but you have to do catering jobs. Catering jobs are intense. Anyone ever done a catering job? 12 hours, 15 hours, 19 hours, 36 hours. Like, you have to go and do those catering jobs sometimes. Right? It's just like so intense. You know, you've been serving for 6 hours. Sometimes, you know, I remember one time I think I was serving 6 hours behind the Bain Marie. And then I looked at the line and there's still 20 people there. Oh my God. You know? So I said to all the people, why don't you just go and listen to the music or something. You know, stop coming. I didn't actually say that, but that's how I was thinking. Why don't you just go and do something? Then, you know, another 6 hours you had to serve, and then you look back and there's still another 20 people. And just like, almost leave your body. Then you go and sleep, you lay in your tent, you fall asleep, and then you know, someone wakes up 2 hours later. Hey, there's 20 people there, come on. So you have to get up and go out and do it again. Right? So that's not really the mode of goodness. Right? But sometimes you have to use the mode of passion to get something done. It doesn't mean you live like that all the time, but sometimes you have to just push. Right? Because it's hard to maintain your consciousness when you're working that hard. But sometimes it's preaching. So Krishna sees it. Okay, you pushed when I needed you to push. So later on, when you come back down to the mode of goodness, Krishna blesses you. He says, your heart is purified because you surrendered to me. But we can't live like that all the time. We have to live more subtly in general. So here, it says that Swayambhuva Manu, he lived his whole life and then he transcended the modes of material nature. So that is also what we should do. Live your life. And at the end, you give up all your attachment to this material world, past, present, and future. Because at the time of death, if you're thinking, oh, that happened to me back in 1965, right, then, right, or if you die and you're still thinking, oh, I haven't done this yet, you don't transcend. So we have to give up our attachments. Right? Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Na Sochiti, Na Kanchiti. Not always lamenting, not always angry. Otherwise you don't transcend. So we'll stop here and see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. Chaitanya says, Kirtaniyaha Sada Hari. So if you want to remember Krishna, then chant all the time. Right? And then you will remember Krishna. So whatever you're doing, while you're doing it, also chant. So if you're at the job, you know, in your office or something, and you're sitting behind your computer, then you just lean back, close your eyes and say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then you open your eyes and everyone in the office is looking at you. So, maybe you can't do it in your, but in your mind you can do it. You can just, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, your screensaver can be a picture of Krishna, and you can have pictures of the deities on your... My wife, Atulya, she actually became a devotee because she was working in one company, and there was a devotee working in the same company. And she used to have to go and speak to him, you know, go to his desk. So she'd go, and then, you know, on the desk he had a picture of Nisringadev, and on the screensaver there was a picture of Nisringadev. And she'd look and say, who is that? What is that? That's how she became a devotee. He said, oh, this is, you know, I'm a Hare Krishna, this is the Hare Krishna. He said, oh, he said, do you want to come to the temple? He said, yeah, okay. And now she's a devotee. Hare Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya says, always chant. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Satato Kirtiyanto Ma, always chant about me. And Lord Chaitanya says, Kirtaniya Sadahari, always chant about Krishna. So that's the basic principle. Of course, there's so many things you can do to be Krishna conscious. So many things, but yeah, that's the basic. If you do that, then everything else is accomplished. Even I know one devotee, you know, he has to work in the office, you know, on the computer. So he works 8 hours in the company or whatever. So 1 hour every day he just reads. So if no one's around him on the computer, just comes straight up, you know, Bhagavatam, he just reads for 1 hour every day. And if there are people around, then at lunchtime he goes to the photocopier and he photocopies the Bhagavatam. And then he just has the notes on his desk because the people looking at the, you know, he's supposed to be working. 1 hour every day, he works. Works for Telstra or something. And then, you know, they pay him. And he reads the book all the time. So that's the system. So actually, if you're determined, nothing can stop you becoming Krishna conscious. You just have to be determined. I know one other devotee. He was working in the office in Melbourne. He had like 40 people in his department. And every morning, he wore tilak every day. Most always when we're tilak because they find that's a bit, you know, feel that he walked to like every day. And you know, everyone in the office would say, you know, what's that? And, you know, he told everyone he's a Hare Krishna. And every morning when, you know, you walk into the office, he wouldn't speak to anyone unless they said Hare Bol. So the whole office, everyone in the morning, they said Hare Bol. If they said hello, he'd just ignore them. He said, no, you have to say Hare Bol. I said, what does that mean? I said, well, that's how we say hello, Hare Krishna. So, okay. So a whole office in the morning, you'd walk in, everyone'd say, Hare Bol. There's no limit. There's no limit to how you can preach. Hare Krishna. Any other questions? Goodness means you have to live in the mode of goodness. Like that. So if you live in the mode of goodness, your mind will gradually come in the mode of goodness. Right? So it means living in the mode of goodness means you have to get up early in the morning. For Mangalati. Especially when you live in the ashram, that should be your system. You go to Mangalati. Right? In the, you know, you're living in the ashram, you go to Mangalati. So you're automatically in the mode of goodness. Because that time of the day, passion is not strong. Then passion comes. So then, when your body is young, how old are you? In your 20s? Or 28. Yeah. So when your body is that age, there's a lot of passion in the body. Right? So you have to use, Prabhupada said, you have to use that passion in Krishna service. So you go to Causeway, you pick up the buckets, carry them upstairs, and you do some stuff. Use your energy in Krishna service. Go on Harinam and dance down the street like a madman. And distribute Prabhupada's books and do all this service and use your passion in Krishna service. And then at the end of the day, when you come back, because your passion is out, then you can just sit down and you can read peacefully. So that is the system. So passion is there because your body is passion, you're young, that's the nature. When you get to about 35, it starts to die off because just the nature of the material body. Right? Passion becomes less and you're easy to control. But when you're young, you have to use that energy in Krishna service. And then gradually. But live in the mode of goodness means get up early in the morning. Do those things. Any other questions? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki.